You're listening to the Virtual Freeway Podcast, hosted by your favorite duo, Asher and Sherriston. Your source for knowledge, tips, and interviews of people around the world taking on flexible work in growing digital space. We hope this podcast helps put you on the path to doing something special and empowers you toward your entrepreneurial spirit. Let's get the journey started.
Welcome, guys. Welcome back to another episode of the Virtual Freeway Podcast. My name is Asher, and I'm with Sherriston. And today, we have a guest with us. His name is Greg. Greg, how are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good.
Good to have you here, man.
Good. Thanks for having me.
So Asher introduced you and he kind of shared his page or your page with me. And he was like, hey, man, check out this guy. Like, he's kind of set up a whole digital lifestyle, or at least kind of in that path. And that's kind of what Asher and I have always been trying to learn more about and showcase. So I was really excited to have you on board. So we're happy to have you here.
Great. Yeah, I did the whole digital nomad thing for many years. So, yeah, just let me know what you want to talk about.
Yeah. So today we wanted to talk about, I guess, maybe side hustles in general, because there's plenty of things that we can do on the side to make our digital life work out. And so with you, I know that you were in Asia for a while.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of vlogging. You've done a lot of stock footage. But I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about all of that. But first, before we dive into those topics, I want to kind of get maybe the reason why you decided to take on that lifestyle in the first place, because you're from Canada, you're from BC, right?
Yeah, Vancouver. Spent most of my time, actually born in South Africa, but moved around a bit. But I guess we'll start the story from Vancouver. So I was actually in a corporate IT job and went through university, did my MBA. And by the time I finished, I was inspired to start my own company. So the long story short is I ended up selling my place, ended up getting an SLR Canon camera at the time. And YouTube was around. So I was posting videos and, you know, I wasn't quite sure what to do. There wasn't much YouTubers back then. And Vancouver is such an expensive city. And I started traveling. I tried to launch a travel business in Vancouver. That didn't work out. And I said, screw it. I want to go traveling. And I had GoPro Hero 2, this Canon SLR, started shooting video in places like Turks and Caicos. And I went to Asia for the first time as an adult, and I loved it. And I actually went back to work for a company in Vancouver for another year to save up again. And I realized how hard it is after you had that taste of freedom. So I had 1 year to try to figure things out. And by the time that year was up, I decided I wanted to do a working holiday in Taiwan, try to learn Mandarin Chinese and try to figure this video business thing. And while I was there, I discovered stock footage and actually met a Vancouver programmer in Taiwan, and he introduced me to what digital nomad the term was, and that led me down a whole rabbit hole, and you know, the whole Thailand lifestyle, and then there's a whole other chapter that once you go to Chiang Mai, Thailand, meeting other like-minded people trying to do similar things that have read Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week. And yeah, I mean, that really kind of was a whole nother chapter in itself. But I'd say being in Vancouver, Canada, it's just, if I'd stayed here, I'd probably just end up going back to a job. The culture and the environment is just not here.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story, because I've kind of lived that life a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm somebody I came to South Korea for the first time in 2018, and I did the 1 year teaching in the public school system. And then there I said, okay, my year is done. Let me go back to Canada, because I didn't think I was going to be a teacher for the rest of my life. Spent a year, went back into the accounting world. And then I was kind of like, oh my God, like this is like, I can't believe the difference in like lifestyle compared to what it was like in South Korea versus what it's like back in the corporate world. And I went to school for accounting and stuff, and I fell back into that life, and I just, something kept on telling me, not like you said, that because I had that taste of freedom, I'm like, I can't continue to do this right now. So I decided to come back. So I came back in August. Yeah, I came back in August of 2020. So I've been here for the last 5 months. So I totally relate to what you're talking about. And I kind of want to talk a little bit about, I guess, when you're in Taiwan with regards to the working holiday. Because one thing that a lot of people don't know about is this working holiday visa that you can apply for. So there's plenty of countries that Canada allows you to apply to. I think there's like South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, and a bunch Australia, of European countries as well. France, Australia, exactly. So could you kind of just explain what a working holiday is, how long they last for, and then how, I guess, you went through that application process?
Well, the working holiday, I think it's usually a year, and it depends on which passport you have, but yeah, I remember looking at Australia, New Zealand, and there's a certain age requirement. And unfortunately, I was 35 at the time. And Taiwan's cutoff was 35. And it basically gives you like a free pass to do whatever you want, as long as you can cover yourself. And there's a lot of different requirements. But I'd say applying for Taiwan was actually pretty straightforward. You had to do some health checkups and go through it, just give them a lot of information. But once you're actually there, what I found was I actually taught English in Taiwan as well and tried to find some local work. The local companies actually don't know what a working holiday visa is. You know, so it's a program that not a lot of people do know about. And I think it's a great way, especially for digital nomads, because, you know, I spent time in Thailand with the digital nomads and the foreigners, and they're always trying to, you know, find that what's that visa that can let me stay longer. And working holiday visas are a great way to give you that time to sort things out, whether it's studying or teaching English or doing something online. And now there's a golden visa in Taiwan I'm kind of got my eyes on. That's, you know, that's a whole nother thing. But yeah, working holiday visas, I think, are underrated. And if you're 30 or under, it's, you know, it's a great opportunity to stay in another country, get a taste of what it's like. Canadian passports are, I think they're in the top 10. They're one of the better passports, but you don't get to flex it unless you leave Canada, right?
That's a really good point. I think the common individual here, like everyone loves travel, but we don't really understand the power of the passport. I used to ask when I was younger, I was like, what is the point of this? I don't understand. Like, it's just a book that lets me go to places, but you don't really understand the power of that. So I like that you pointed that out.
Yeah. The Canadian passport gives you a lot of freedom. Pre-COVID, things are a lot different now. So Ash, you said you're in South Korea. Are you in Seoul or Busan?
I'm near Seoul. So there's a city called Sejong. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's they're planning to make it the new capital city of South Korea, because primarily right now, most of the population is concentrated in Busan and Seoul. So I think they're trying to bring more attention to the central part of the country. So I'm currently living here, not by choice, just because I found myself here, like the job placed me here. So, but yeah, so far so good. It's a developed city, and they're doing construction, and hopefully in the future it's going to be much better than it is today, because it's kind of boring over here, to be honest. Seoul's much better. Yeah.
I've been to Seoul, Busan. I loved it.
Awesome. Yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful country. So the next thing I kind of wanted to talk about was, I guess, how your vlogging and YouTube channel experience has gone, because with regards to what we're trying to do here, we set up this podcast called the Virtual Freeway Podcast. We are people that believe that, you know, there's a force or there's a movement towards a digital lifestyle, not just in terms of people trying to be digital nomads or people, you know, trying to make money online, even corporate worlds, like as you can see, because of this COVID, the pandemic that we're currently in. A lot of people transitioning from working from home and that lifestyle of kind of like working remotely, right? So YouTube is one of those avenues in which people can try and make, you know, a name for themselves or a kind of part-time living, I should say. Yeah. So I guess how's your experience been with the YouTube world?
Well, YouTube, I started my channel in 2011, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was trying to create these blockbuster video hits, which would take a lot of time, and I post them on there, and you know, I didn't get a million views, so it was a bit discouraging. And I kept posting videos of Asia, like after I came back from my trip, and actually while I was in Taiwan, that got me the opportunity. Company in Singapore called Motion Elements. They said, "Hey, you got a lot of great videos in Asia. Can you organize them, give us the keywords in a spreadsheet and ship us a hard drive?" And they gave me $500. And I said, "Oh, okay, why can't I do this on my own, right? There's other agencies like Pond5 and Shutterstock." So yeah, that was actually big at the time for me. And YouTube helped me get discovered that way, even though I didn't have a huge following. And it actually wasn't, I think 2017, 2018, I hit 1,000 subscribers. And then, you know, I started to see a little bit of AdSense revenue. But, you know, what I guess the wisdom at the time was that, you know, Google AdSense revenue, it's not that, you know, it's not that much. It's not the way to leverage YouTube. YouTube is owned by Google, so it's a great way to get discovered through Google search. It's the second largest search engine. And I was already doing videos of videographers and teaching online. So that was content I could repurpose. So I just continued to do it. And it was actually last year during February, I said, I'm going to commit myself to being consistent. And then I think I hit 2,000 beginning of that year, and then just kept posting. And then I hit my first $100 a month, like early in 2020. And then I'm like, oh, wow, it's growing. I better pay more attention to it, right? And yeah, so now I'm at 3,000, going for 4,000. Yeah, I share my revenue earnings sometimes on my YouTube channel, Digital Nomads in Asia. And yeah, I mean, I'm just almost at 300 US a month on just the AdSense revenue. But it's always at the back end that you can make better money off of selling footage or online courses or digital products or the Amazon affiliate links. But the AdSense is, I think it's a great time to do things like YouTube, especially during the lockdown.
For sure. Yeah. Can you expand on that a little bit? You said it's always on the back end where you can kind of make most of your money. So if you were to kind of explain that a little bit, do you mean in terms of funneling towards the actual product? So whatever video that you would post up on YouTube, or like, can mm-hmm. you explain that a bit?
Yeah. If I post, like, let's just say I make a course, which I have Learn to Film and Earn with Your Drone.
Right.
And I'll put some videos from that course on there. Let's just say mm-hmm. which is the best drone model to get in 2021, or how to get cinematic footage. And I post those videos on my channel, and I'll put links in the description that will either give them more free, like access to a free course, but I've also got the paid course, right? So people that find those videos are entering my funnel, so to speak. They're interested in one of those videos. So maybe they're interested in that course or more related courses to that. If you're interested in drone video, maybe you're interested in how to make money from that. And if you got a drone, maybe you've got another camera, and maybe you're interested in travel. So it's sort of like a ecosystem that you can, YouTube helps people discover you through that way. And then you can also do things like Amazon affiliate links. I just started getting into that this year. I've got some friends that do that full time in different niches.
Right.
But if people are looking up videos on drones or you're doing review videos, you can put those affiliate links there, and then it's a good commission if it's a like a drone or a camera. Those are not cheap
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then same goes for stock footage. I started promoting my footage collection and then started licensing my footage direct to the customer. If you go in a lot of Facebook groups, a lot of the contributors, they're always trying to look for what's the next agency. So yeah, I've been trying the last several years, build up my audience, my following. For different types of back-end products, whether it's footage or courses or even plugins, different types of digital products that are in the video travel world.
For sure.
That's cool because like it's kind of like creating your own ecosystem, right? It's like once you fall into one avenue, whether it's on Instagram or YouTube, then like the person that is looking for that particular content is exposed to everything else that you have to offer. They're like, whoa, there's a course here. I can learn about this. I can do that. So it's extremely interesting how you can create that little digital world for yourself that you can let people into with your funnels. One thing I wanted to talk about was the drone footage. So I'm somebody that owns a drone as well. I have the Mavic Mini, and I've seen the no, not the two. The two is just came out a couple months ago. I got that's mine. The one, I want. Yeah, me too.
249 grams.
Yeah, you don't need the license for using this exactly. So. I do want to get my hands on one of those, but at the same time, the Mavic Mini is great. Yes, I don't film in 4.7K is okay. But in terms of making money with your drone, what exactly are you encouraging your clients or your students to do? Are you telling them to maybe go into the real estate world to sell footage to those people? Are you telling them just in terms of creating content for these stock footage websites? Like what exactly are you letting people know how to make money with their drones?
So stock footage is a great way to do it if you can get the footage. I tell people if you're trying to, like drone footage is still in demand, but if you try to shoot drone footage, then you gotta intentionally try to do it. You know, shoot at least 20 seconds stable footage of the highest resolution that your drone can do, ideally 4K. You know, the TVs are pretty much 4K is becoming the standard on TV sets. And you know, you can also brand yourself. I mean, I got into the drones during the first generation, 2013. So, you know, a lot of my content was around being the travel videographer, the drone videographer. That actually led to a filming assignment by a large company that took me to Busan, South Korea.
Wow.
I did filming assignment in Thailand, Nagasaki, Japan, Busan. And that was through having my website, having my content, and having that content be focused on, you know, branding myself as the drone videographer and having the video to support that. So it's not just having, it's also a bit of a mindset, like how do you use that drone as a tool? It's not just a toy. You know, the drone video is in high demand, and corporate companies also like to, you know, they want to get drone videos of their factories and their facilities. So I did many assignments in South Korea. The one time was for corporate video. So I did a proper interview with a camera, but they also wanted drone video. So having a drone is like, it's an additional edge that you have over the competition. I think every content creator should have a drone in their gear kit. It's not enough just to have a drone because for corporate customers, they're interested in, usually it's talking type of videos, but they want the drone videos supplemented. So that's a couple of ways, and you can do courses. I started out doing some courses, and I saw other people getting into different types of drone niches. Like you can do third-party automation, you can pre-plan your flights. Like it's really next level stuff. And then there's other applications of drones, like the farming, drone farming. And so I think you can take those skills from the drone and they're transferable. I think you just got to put yourself out there, put your content, and it'll lead to opportunities.
For sure. So when you first started maybe playing around with the drone, like, did you, because you touched on it, you're like, the drone should be used as a tool more than a toy. So how did you kind of, like, what were you doing to kind of learn those skills? Were you taking courses or were you kind of just playing around on your own?
I was playing around. There was not that many courses at that time. I mean, DJI released their first model Phantom 1 in 2013. And the only guy with a video on there was, I forget his name. He was working for them at the time.
Right.
And they had no app. So there was a lot of, close calls. I've got some stories. Just trying to get a lot of practice and flight time. And, you know, being in places like Bali or Thailand, where there's not a lot of buildings, I mean, that's a great way to practice. And yeah, I've flown a lot. So I got my hours in and learned all the... DJI hasn't really changed their software too much. They change their products every couple of years.
Right.
But once you get to know how to use their app and, you know, different modes of flying, it's not too much different between models.
For sure.
That's pretty cool. Just a couple more questions and I think we'll be done here. In terms of, where are you currently? Are you in Canada at the moment or?
Yeah, I'm in Vancouver at the moment. Like to be in Malaysia or Thailand right now, but yeah,
what are we all, the man? Current.
Yeah. Yeah, you're lucky in South Korea at least. If I were you, I would be taking advantage of your location, filming lots of content with your drone.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, because there are some areas of South Korea that don't have a lot of drone footage covered. So I'm trying my best there. We had a little bit of a COVID outbreak that happened. So
yeah,
everybody was freaking out and discouraging people from traveling. When I say a little outbreak, it's like 1,000 cases a day, which everybody's like, oh, man, that's nothing, right? So it's just that here, like, they're very particular, like, or very worried whenever there's a little spike in cases. So now we're down to about 300 and something. So people are getting a little more free again. So it'll be a little bit, I have an opportunity now to kind of travel around the country a little bit and get some drone footage. Because like you said, I don't think this market has been heavily covered in terms of drone footage. But
there's also English content is not too much in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have do you film with a mirrorless or SLR camera, by the way?
No, currently all I have is just my GoPro and my Mavic Mini. That's all that I've been using so far. So I'd like to upgrade my camera setup.
Okay. I get asked a lot by people wanting to do videos in South Korea. Yeah, but the language barrier is an issue.
100%. It's not an easy language to learn too. So it's but luckily, you know, in South Korea, even though like people say English is an issue, a lot of people do understand a little bit, right? Like there's the second language that they learn in school is English. We learn French in school, but just like how Canadians know a little bit of French, the little that we do know. Yeah, like in Korea, same thing. If you say like the simplest things in English, they'll understand. Mm-hmm. But if you start speaking in sentences, they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Slow down. So So I guess your plan is once the pandemic is over, you're going to start traveling again. Is that what you're looking to do?
Yeah, I'd like to. I mean, I do have, I'm in a long distance relationship now with someone in Malaysia. So if that's still there, I'm going to try to get there. In the past, when the borders were open, we would do visa runs. Not sure if you're familiar with visa runs.
No.
So a Canadian passport, let's just say if you go to somewhere like Malaysia or Japan, you get 3 months. So you can use a tourist visa to, you know, spend time there, and then you can leave before that, you know, that 3 months is up. So Thailand is one of the countries that's open now, but there you have to quarantine, you have to do all these tests, and the visas are still an issue. So you don't have those other countries in the region that you can do a visa run to. You know, it's cheap to travel within Asia if you use AirAsia.
Right.
But yeah, that's not there right now. So I have to see what happens with the COVID and the borders, because it's, you know, travel is an expense. I've learned that there's a lot of hidden costs. So when I go there, I spend most of the year there. And so I've actually cut a backlog of footage, because I was filming like a madman for the past five, six years. So I got a huge backlog. And so I'm going to see what unfolds. It looks like 21 is pretty much like 2020 so far.
Yeah, seriously. So I wanted to get from you was, you mentioned that when you first started, you didn't really have a lot of people that you can look at. Obviously, YouTube wasn't the YouTube that we know today. Drone footage wasn't as common as it was. So you kind of had to play around with it. Now it's kind of the opposite, where there's so many people with drones. Obviously, it's still growing. They're still expensive, but there's still a growing population of people playing around with that. YouTube is, you know, depending on who you ask, it is saturated or it isn't. But so to someone trying to start off in this niche now, who wants to create a digital presence, whether in the stock footage or video space, or just recording and getting into that field, what would you recommend in terms of establishing yourself, creating a brand? What are the steps that you would suggest to people who are starting out today?
I think you need to diversify your time and energy. And I think it's great if you have the ability to create content in different forms. This is good, audio and video in front of the computer. Having a drone, that's a whole different thing. And having, you know, like a camera you can vlog or film professional stuff with, an A-cam. And put content out there. And you have to look at each person is in their own situation. Asher's in South Korea, which is, I don't think there's too many people that speak English with, you know, your skill set. So there's something you could take advantage of there. I know this Swedish guy in Taiwan. So he speaks almost fluent Mandarin. He wasn't a YouTuber while I was there. And then I left in 2015. Now I look at his channel. I think he's got like 70,000 subscribers. He's a YouTuber now, full time. And so he's taking advantage of the fact that he's blonde guy, blue eyes from Sweden that speaks English and Mandarin, and he's a YouTuber. So he's just traveling around creating vlogs. I'd say put content out there that you're passionate about and see what sticks, see what is gaining momentum for you. But I think the days of just relying on one type of thing like stock footage, because it is so saturated, because the information is out there,
right?
You can't do that. I still think there's gaps, there's opportunities. You just have to be quick to recognize it. And if it's not, you have to pivot and change quickly. I think that's what we're looking at. Going forward. But I still think it's early days in some areas, like the live streaming, the Twitch and all that stuff, TikTok. Yeah, but you don't want to spread yourself too thin.
So right.
That's my issue. Like I love so many different things that I find it hard just to focus on one thing.
Yeah, it's hard. There's so many platforms out now and you want to have a presence everywhere, but it is tough. So I empathize with that.
Yeah, same here. Even LinkedIn, people say, like, you know, LinkedIn's also another platform, but it's just like, man, LinkedIn's a whole nother ball game. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Have you tried LinkedIn, Greg? Or
yeah, I went to Gary V. You know Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
Gary V. He came to Malaysia last year or 2019. And you know, I went there. I'm like listening to hear what's Gary's wisdom this time. And the only thing that I got out of it was LinkedIn posts on LinkedIn and TikTok. So yeah, when I post my YouTube videos, I'm posting to LinkedIn now and trying to look at when they're going to open live streaming on LinkedIn. And Lynda, the online platform, they're owned by LinkedIn. So right. If you can get accepted as an online teacher there, that'd be great. But yeah, I'm posting on LinkedIn as well. Yeah. Pinterest.
Do you have any footage from this Gary V conference in your backlog?
Yeah, it's in my I posted the highlights of the video. If you search Kuala Lumpur Gary V, I think I just got some highlights, but
I missed out. Check this out.
Yeah, I definitely have to check that out because we're big Gary V fans too. So it's nice that you got a chance to go to one of his live events.
Yeah, actually he came to Vancouver a long time ago. I'm not sure if you heard of Neil Patel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were both there. That was like really early days, and Gary was just, you know, every like five words an F-bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a loyal following just like Tim Ferriss does, but I think you gotta look at, you know, what works for you. Take a little bit of wisdom from everyone and see what works.
For sure.
Man, thank you very much, Greg, for your time. I don't know if Sherson has any last things that you wanted to say, or Greg, if you had anything else that you wanted, but that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, can I plug my drone course?
100%, yeah.
Plug whatever you want, anything you want, go for it.
All right, learn to film and earn with your drone. That's it's on Udemy, or I got my Content Creator Academy at phantom3.teachable.com. And you can get the bundle there. So the bundle, I think it's like 20 or 25 bucks, and you get 4 other courses on stock footage. I think I got some Adobe's Creative Suite courses in there. There's 4 courses in there, so it's good value. Bundling is a great way once you have multiple courses to offer value to a student. And not sure if you heard of Udemy.
Yep.
They're a good platform to teach on. But it's also good to have your own school, and Teachable's what I've been using for a while to teach self-hosts.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's incredible. And obviously you've had experience from before YouTube was YouTube. So if there's a lot to learn from you. So your courses are definitely going to be helping a lot of people like us. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time, Greg. I hope to speak to you again in the future. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome, Asher.
Take care.
Thanks for organizing. Bye.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a follow on Instagram and subscribe to us on YouTube. Details are in the description of this episode. We'll see you on the next episode.